From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 31st day of May 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll check in on all the agricultural news for the afternoon and hear what's been happening down on the farm near Shelbyville in Windsor, Illinois, where Matt Bennett is located at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. That with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather. He is in Chicago, and it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us today.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
I'm interested to note from you the seesaw action that we've had in the marketplace and what that has done, if anything, to the way you view the stats and the technicals, particularly for the corn and the soybeans and the wheat. Let's start with the corn and give me kind of a short and a longer term look.
Well, ever since a week ago, I think when I talked to you, we, you know, kind of had some key reversals down in corn and soybeans, more so in corn. It was more dominant. We did make a new high for the move, and then, or no, we didn't quite make a new, I forget, but we did have a good reversal to the downside, and then that didn't follow through on Friday, but then on Monday and Tuesday of this, or I guess Tuesday and Wednesday due to the long weekend, the market had more of a correction off of that reversal down that we had here about a week ago. It's pretty much the same thing in beans. I think since it was the end of the month this week and today was the end of the month, we were kind of in overbought situations there a week ago. And I think a lot of the price action that we've seen since then has been more what I would view as corrective in nature. Now, one would probably argue that there's been some technical damage done. Whether or not it's verified and permanently still remains to be seen. A lot of it, I think, you got to kind of be a little careful when you go through three-day weekends into the month, especially with the dominant positions that the funds hold. And you got to keep in mind one of the main reasons we have funds in the market. They're sponsored by the Futures Commission Merchant. This is the main commission house. And their purpose, one of their purposes, is to generate commission. And the only way you can generate commission is buying and selling. So we have had some commission revenue generation here for the Futures Commission Merchant in Chicago. So now that's going to be out of the way as far as long liquidation goes here with today, the end of the month. Tomorrow will be the start of a new month, and then we'll decide whether or not we're going to bring new money back into the marketplace and kind of go from there. The markets, I'm looking at them on a daily basis. They pretty well have corrected that overbought condition we had here about a week ago. And now we're kind of down in the territory that we might be considered kind of in the oversold category, and we could be ripe then for a turn back to the upside as we go into next week. So we closed the month out, I think, a couple pennies lower on December corn. We closed out the month like 10 cents lower, 9 cents lower on November beans. So while those are lower monthly closes, they're really not a slam dunk price action type top. We would have to see some pretty good follow through to the downside next week to kind of verify that. And that may happen. But for now, I think a lot of it was liquidation, commission generation for the Futures Commission Merchant. And we'll take a look at things, you know, next week, tomorrow, maybe some new money might start coming in. Now, on a fundamental side, we've the crop is planted for all practical purposes. We will argue till now, until the June report, how many acres got planted, whether or not there's going to be a big change in USDA's numbers from the March report. And then we're going to argue whether or not these late planted crops will turn into a big crop. I don't know. We're going to argue all about that. But we started out Tuesday afternoon with the first crop rating levels for corn. They came in the best, I think, in something like 20 years or something like that, much higher than what the trade had expected. Crop rating levels are just nothing but, you know, driving down the road. And if everything looks green and it's growing, they're going to get a good, excellent type rating. I think rating levels starting, you know, probably next Monday and the following week are going to carry a little more weight. And we'll see whether or not some of this dryness that we do see in the Corn Belt is going to take its toll. Right now, the weather maps or weather models, I think, are swinging back and forth. They're not giving the weather forecasters a real good handle on what the future looks like. As an old timer, I've always kind of watched the weather pattern around the official day, or the first day of summer, winter, fall, spring as an indication of what maybe the next 12 weeks might bring. So I think it's important to see what kind of weather pattern we have around that June 20th, 21st, 22nd time frame, and that might give us a better, clearer picture of what kind of weather pattern we may have here for the growing season. But we're trading crop rating levels, we're trading weather patterns, and how that may or may not impact total yield. So that's kind of where we're at. Now, trade issues, they're going to be with us for quite a while, I think. One thing that I wish the media would drop is the word free. There is nothing free in this world. And when someone talks about free trade, they're barking up a wrong tree. There is not free trade. As long as governments are involved in valuation of currencies, valuation of policy, everything is a negotiated trade. Trump is shaking that box. I don't know for sure, but I'll bet you there's a half a dozen lobbyists representing foreign interests in Washington for every congressman and senator there is. So this has been ingrained into our political system for several years, and Trump is trying to shake that box up. And so we're going to have some swings in that. He's trying to get a better deal for the U.S., kind of feels that U.S. has been sold down the river by previous administrations and previous congressional members. So that is going to be on again, off again, shake up the box. But I think in the long run, everything is going to be in our favor in agriculture. Trump has three key areas to take care of. He's got to take care of Texas because that's where the big campaign donations come from. He's got to take care of the farmers in the Midwest, and he's got to take care of the blue-collar workers that lost their jobs to Mexico and other countries due to foreign trade deals. So that's what he's trying to do, is weave trade issues through those three areas and try to benefit those three groups.
Good luck to him on that. That base is pretty diverse, and they don't get along very well. Hey, thanks so much.
I know. But Trump's lucky. He has to be lucky to have won the presidency, so I think he'll be able to wind through it.
I'm sorry. Hey, thanks so much. I'll talk with you again soon. I appreciate it. Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. Hey, do visit our website. There you'll find at willag.org our calendar of events. We'll be on the road a lot for the next couple of weeks, starting on Tuesday in St. Louis at the Corn Utilization Technology Conference, and then we'll be on the Grain Elevator Tour in Sonoma and in Springfield next week, the following week, Fairview, Macomb, Beardstown, Ashland, Gibson City, Coal City, and Hartsburg. And then we'll wrap up on June 14th in Galena at the Illinois Beef Association Summer Conference. Catch all the dates, times, and places that I'll be, and that you can join me right there at willag.org and just hit the calendar link. Let's check in on the agricultural news for the day, and we'll lead with the Farm Bill after many other dates have come and gone. The Senate version may be out soon. The bill could be introduced as early as the 6th of June. Senate Ag Chairman Pat Roberts told folks in Kansas on Wednesday night, although it may be an overly ambitious schedule, Roberts said he'd like to send the bill to the floor just 1 week after getting it through committee, potentially June 12th, but cautioned that date may be a moving target too. The Senate version of the bill is staying a long way from its counterpart in the House. Roberts reiterated that the House version of the Farm Bill could not pass in the Senate because he needs 60 votes to avoid a filibuster. The House version, which has yet to pass, is still relying on solely Republican support whenever a second vote comes up. Roberts reiterated that the Senate version would not be proposing any major changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. The committee might look into some efficiencies, he says, that they could make as to how that program would be administered, but it would not attempt a major overhaul. In other titles, Roberts says the legislation will fix the ARC program to some degree, referring to the Agricultural Risk Coverage Program that triggers payments to commodity farmers when the average crop revenue in their county drops below a guaranteed level. But he shot down any proposal that would benefit one region of farmers over the other. "This doesn't cut it with me. Look, guys, we either hang together or hang separately," he said, adding that there isn't any commodity here that is going to be hurt by the Senate bill. His comments may be aimed at a bill introduced by Senators Thune of South Dakota and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. It would benefit the more than 90% of farmers growing corn and soybeans who signed up for ARC, primarily in the Midwest, in part by changing the formula for calculating subsidies. For those southern growers of cotton, peanuts, rice, and canola who signed up for the Price Loss Coverage Program, or PLC, which sends out payments when prices drop below reference prices set by Congress, they would likely receive lower subsidies under the Senate bill. While Roberts appears to be taking a hard stance against certain aspects of the Thune-Brown bill, the majority of Senate Agriculture Committee members represent Midwestern states, including top Democrat Debbie Stabenow, who is from Michigan. Oh, let's stay in Washington, but we'll switch to trade now. The United States on Thursday said it was moving ahead with tariffs on aluminum and steel imports from Canada, Mexico, and the European Union, ending a two-month exemption and potentially setting the stage for a trade war with some of America's top allies. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross told reporters on a telephone briefing that a 25% tariff on steel imports and a 10% tariff on aluminum imports from the EU, Canada, and Mexico would go into effect at midnight on Friday. He says, "We look forward to continued negotiations both with Canada and Mexico on the one hand and with the European Commission on the other, because there are other issues that we also need to get resolved," he said. Ross offered little detail about what the EU, Canada, and Mexico could do to have the tariffs lifted. The imposition of these tariffs, along with other changes the Trump administration has announced this week, has been rocking the marketplace. In fact, things had started to look a little better, especially as it was related to trade with China and on EPA's renewable fuels actions. Agriculture's fortunes, though, have again taken a swift turn for the week. President Trump, not satisfied with trade talks with China and after putting the conflict on hold, is now proceeding with plans for tariffs on $50 billion in Chinese imports and other restrictions. Mr. Trump says his unpredictability gives him an edge at the bargaining table, but it also has farmers on edge. Here's National Pork Producers spokesman Jim Monroe on the impact of the early duties on Chinese steel and aluminum and China's retaliation.
We've seen the hog futures drop about $18 per animal, and if you look at that on an annualized basis, it comes out to about a $2.2 billion loss. So I don't know that you can attribute all of that loss to the trade friction with China, but it's certainly a main factor, according to Iowa State University economist Dermot Hayes.
Again, now Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross is due to arrive Saturday in Beijing for more trade talks as President Trump tightens the screws on that nation for promised concessions on agriculture and manufacturing. The administration, meantime, is having trouble keeping its own promise to curtail ethanol waivers for profitable oil refiners, spurring ethanol and farm groups to file suit in the 10th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. National Corn Growers Executive Vice President John Doggett has more.
Having these waivers granted in the middle of the night without any notice to the American people is just plain wrong.
The corn growers, the National Farmers Union, the Renewable Fuels Association, and the American Coalition for Ethanol are all challenging the renewable fuel waivers EPA granted to refineries in Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming.
We think that the president and the administration need to come through on their promise that they were going to support a 15 billion gallon RFS, and by taking a billion plus gallons of ethanol out of the compliance measures, that's not complying with that promise that the president made.
Financial disclosures showed the exemption saved the firms $170 million in compliance cost, leading RFA CEO Bob Dineen to charge EPA secretly and methodically destroying demand for renewable fuels. That, when corn farmers, he says, are suffering their fifth straight year of low crop prices and the lowest net farm income since 2006. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd, great being here.
Let's start with the forecast over the next several days, beginning with this afternoon in our area and other parts of the Corn Belt. Will there be rainfall?
There will be some more rain over the next few days. We have a couple of thunderstorm clusters that are going to move across the southern Corn Belt and the northern Delta. That occurs from today into tomorrow. So look for a little more rain in southern Illinois, southern Missouri, and then into Kentucky, Tennessee, and parts of Arkansas. After that, we start to look further to the north and west. We'll see a number of thunderstorm clusters form in the Dakotas and the northwest half of the Corn Belt here this weekend. That'll start up a little bit tonight and tomorrow, but more so for corn and soybeans tomorrow night and on Saturday. That will extend into Iowa, Minnesota, again, parts of the Dakotas, and then also Nebraska. A few of those storms will make their way into the central and eastern Corn Belt Saturday night and Sunday, but we're not looking for heavy rainfall with that setup. And that all occurs because a strong cold front sweeps on through.
You know, speaking of cold, April was a record cold month. However, and I don't know whether this is just perception because it was so cold in April, May sure did seem like it was warm. How's it going to wrap up?
Well, it's fairly incredible to think about this, but you're absolutely right. We went through the second coldest April of the last 124 years, and now we're going through the second warmest May of the last 124 years. That creates a differential between the April temperature and the May temperature that crushes every record going back in the 124-year record. The only year that was somewhat similar was in 1936, where it was very cold in April and then very warm in May. But the temperature differential there was only about 20 degrees. This year, we'll have a differential of about 25 degrees with nothing in between those two. So it truly is unprecedented. Probably the more fascinating feature, though, is that once you start looking at the warm Mays and start thinking about what follows, we start to draw some interesting statistics. If you look at the very warmest Mays on record, we'll take the 25 warmest, and you start looking at what happened in the Junes that follow. Well, you start out with the warmest May on record, and then you go all the way out to about the 16th May, and you'll see that 14 of those were warmer than normal in June, and 12 of those were drier than normal in June. That gives a strong precedent for June to end up being warmer and drier than normal, simply because May is a telling factor as to what normally follows in June. The reason we think there might be some validity here for the 2018 scenario is because as we start to look at our weather maps, we can see that although it does turn cool this weekend and early next week for a few days, that does a couple of different things. Number one, it allows heat to develop to the west, and that heat is eventually going to build back in here. That'll start up around Wednesday and Thursday of next week. Probably more importantly, though, that cool front is going to shove all of the muggy air that's in place now very far to the south. And by the time the warm air begins to assemble next week, there won't be enough time for southerly winds to develop and then pull all that muggy air back to the north. That'll lead to a situation where we'll have a couple of thunderstorms here and there next weekend into next weekend, but more than likely, we won't see well-organized and heavy rainfall. That's simply because of that lack of humidity.
And rainfall would be something many producers will be looking for on a weekly basis in the month of June, at least an inch, and maybe we're not going to start that way, I suppose.
Well, that certainly might be the case, but the growing season is very long, and we do have a long time for things to change. But at least the history says that we do need to keep an eye on how warm it will be and how dry it will be going forward. And the near-term weather maps are essentially telling us the same thing, at least for the next 10 days or so.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.